I am joined today by Robert Marovich, who is the host and the producer of Gospel Memories. Welcome to the show, Robert, or should I call you Bob?
Bob is fine. Dr. Franklin, pleased to be on the show.
I am so happy to have you. I don't know where to start. I am so impressed with your background, what you do, but in particular, gospel music. Give us either the short or the midpoint story of how you got involved with gospel music and why gospel music.
Oh, sure. Well, a short version of it is that I really first heard gospel music intentionally in 1984, in January of 1984. But going back, as a kid, I had always enjoyed black music. When other of my friends were buying Beatles records, I was interested in Booker T and the MGs. I think
Great.
Hang 'Em High was my very first 45. I and growing up, then I got more introduced to like vocal harmony groups, the blues, R&B, soul music, and so that was my understanding of black music. But I had never listened to gospel until 1984, and it was clearly by accident. I was in my college dorm room as a junior in college, and I was the music minister for our dorm, and I was just flipping the channels on the radio to find an old radio show that I enjoyed when I was growing up as a background to my getting ready for the for the rehearsal. And I came across a radio broadcast by the Cosmopolitan Church of a prayer choir in Chicago, and just blew me away. I realized right then this is where the music I really loved, it was a source. And so that was my first introduction to gospel music.
And I want to have you describe the feeling that gospel music have on you. Can you talk about that particular feeling?
Sure. I mean, when I first heard, I can never forget what the choir was singing. They were singing "Every Time I Feel the Spirit," which I learned later was a they were covering an old arrangement by a church in New York City, and I was a Bishop O'Neill's church, and but it was relentless, and I just felt, here I am, a music mi minister for a Catholic school dorm in college, and we're not singing anything like that. And I wish we had. And I'm listening and thinking, I could understand why someone would want to go to church if this is the soundtrack. I mean, this was something that just struck me as it is a perfect accompaniment for the lyrics. And so I also listened, I think, to Andre Crouch All the Way. And I think that there maybe even was a version of The Healer that the Cosmopolitan Church of Prayer did on that broadcast, and it just made me realize, wow, this is what sacred music can be. And it just gave me that sense. And to this day, I feel the spirituality that I have comes from gospel music more so than any institutional church.
I'm kind of interested. While in Texas and now here in California, we had listeners who would call up and make testimonials and talking about how to move the music really helped them to get through, a terrible loss of a loved one and so forth. And I'm curious to know, would you share a story or two about some of the testimonials that I'm sure you've received about your program and how it moves the heart and the spirit?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned the radio show on that, because originally my Gospel Memories radio show was only on first Sundays, and it was early morning, like 2 to 6 in the morning. And you wondered, you're sitting there playing music for 4.5 hours in the middle of the night, essentially, and wondering who's listening. And you'd occasionally get a call from so and so and so and so. But one night I got a call from a gentleman who said, "Can you please play The Last Mile of the Way?" He was literally staring down the last mile of his way, and he wanted to hear that song. And it made me realize what a ministry this really is. And then later on, having people to contact me and say that a song that I played, inspired them. To in one instance, it was a small musical group who so loved this one song, they wanted to find out how they could cover it in their own music. But others were just like, they were blown away. They'd never heard this artist or they'd never heard the song, and it just moved them. I had a Catholic priest one time call my show and say, I'm ashamed of myself that I didn't know any of this music existed. He was loving it. So it does, but I'll never forget that the last mile of the way, because this gentleman, really needed it. And here it was, probably 4 in the morning when you don't know who's listening. And yet he was listening and he was needing that ministry that morning.
Your encyclopedic knowledge of this music. And I'm listening to your programs, and I'm listening to Andre Crouch, I'm listening to Shirley Caesar. And I'm just wondering, wow, what type of collection must you have to feature some of those metropolitan gospel choirs and so forth? Talk a bit about your collection there.
Sure. I have every format available except cylinders. I don't even know that. Well, I suppose I do have recordings of cylinders, but 45, 78s, LPs, CDs, you name it, I have it. I started collecting probably around the late 90s or so, maybe mid 90s, but a very small collection until I started the radio show in 2001 and realized I needed to kind of get the collection boosted in order to do the show. I think last count it was about maybe 4,000 singles, about 2,000 LPs, and then I am in fellowship with a group of collectors of gospel music who go real deep into the local groups, and they share MP3s among each other, and so I've been able to pull together probably another 14 to 1500 selections just from their sharing. And so now my collection has been and continues to be digitized by Baylor University for the Black Gospel Archive. So right now my 78s are not on they are still at Baylor, and the majority of my LPs are at Baylor being digitized. My 45s are still here in the CDs and all that, but I'm supposed to get the rest of the collection back sometime this summer.
Wow. I'm your on-air name, Blue Eyed Soul. Talk a bit about that.
Right.
I
That
like
actually,
that.
yeah, that came about. Somebody did an article on me and called me the Blue-Eyed Gospel Child. And I thought, oh, I kind of like that, but I kind of like Blue-Eyed Soul Child better because it reminded me of like the Righteous Brothers and some of the groups they used to call Blue-Eyed Soul. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll adopt that myself. And also just to let people know, I come at this as a white middle-aged person who did not grow up in the Black church. And so I hope that in some way I can bring a perspective to the music as sort of a born again listener, if you will, who was sort of thrilled by this in ways that I was never thrilled by my own Catholic church music, which I found a little arrogant and maybe sometimes even a little boring. But gospel music really had it going on, and so I wanted to let people know that I was coming to this from a whole different perspective, but hoping that I would be accepted nevertheless.
Well, music is the universal language, and I can only imagine what gospel music is. It moves souls, and I'm curious and would like to get your thoughts on Black history is not just in February, or Women's History Month is not just in March, but it's a continuous type of a celebration. Talk a bit about, I know you did in your Black History Month special, you did some programs there. Talk a bit about some of the selections programs that you chose, and why you chose those particular selections.
Right, yeah, because I agree with you. Every month is Black History Month, certainly Gospel Memories, because we try to provide a little historical context for the music we play. But particularly for Black History Month, I wanted to find songs that were story songs that described some aspect of Black history, or songs of protest, songs that were recorded live, when individuals were getting ready to march during the Civil Rights Movement, something that literally had more to do with specific aspects of Black history than we normally do. And thankfully, there were enough artists back in the day who took the time to do story songs. People like Otis Jackson, who wrote a number of songs about whether they were known or unknown Black heroes, like Madame McLeod Bethune, but then also individuals who fought in the Second World War that were heroes there. So yeah, the finding those songs, there are plenty of them and plenty to fill an entire month's worth of programming on.
And talk about the significance of gospel music and music in general, but gospel music specifically, empowering marchers during the civil rights movement.
Yeah, it was very important. In fact, you might even say a subset, of the spirituals really were the songs that the marchers embraced, partly. And I didn't know this until reading Bob Darden's book on civil rights and gospel music, was that that originated in a lot of the labor union strikes, where African American marchers started to, sing some of the old spirituals on the picket line, and that was picked up by civil rights marchers as a great thing to encourage people. But I remember hearing Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King say that, music is the way to get people's spirits uplifted and ready. And so you think of all these great gospel songs that we know, some of the congregational songs, and again, some of the spirituals that really have meaning. And in fact, I had a gentleman to contact me the other day who said, "Bob, on your show, play Peace Be Still, because the winds and the waves are part of our life right now, and we need that. We need to hear, that Jesus will be there and calm the wind and the waves, just as he did in biblical days." So even, songs like Peace Be Still, which weren't sung on the marching lines, still resonate with individuals because of its message of endurance, resilience, victory. So yeah, I think ideal for civil rights, especially when a lot of groups were organized in churches, to sing those wonderful songs that you just know they're part of your spirit, and you can start, like lift a line, and everyone will join in.
I want to come to your book about Peace Be Still just in a second, but I share this little anecdote. I was working in Maryland a long time ago, and I got a call. I was doing a gospel sh shifts early one Sunday morning, and I got a call from a listener on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And he said, "Could you please play some music by the Canton Spirituals?" And I said, "Oh my goodness, that is so near and dear to me because Canton, Mississippi is in the state of Mississippi, which is where I'm from." And I was just like, this music, this gospel music, it touches everyone who dares to listen and allows themselves to listen and then be moved by it. What did you say?
Yeah, I mean, I know Jewish atheists, which seems like a contradiction in terms of, but it's a real thing, who are blown away by the music, and it touches them. And that's what I think it is. It's kind of, as you mentioned, music is universal. And I recall being so moved when I first heard Total Praise by Richard Smallwood. I was incredibly moved by that. And then I remember hearing from someone who said it moved him so much he had to pull the car over to the side of the road because he was just bawling. I think that's the amazing thing about music, and particularly gospel music, is you get those words and the melody, and you just think about all of the lyrics that we just cite during the day to uplift ourselves. If we ever needed the Lord before, we sure do need him now. Things that came out of gospel music that to me are little mini ministries to our soul when we're down and need some uplifting.
I agree 100%. Your book, Peace Be Still, talk a bit about that. And one of my favorite of all times, James Cleveland, Reverend James Cleveland, talk a bit about that.
It was entirely accidental that I did this book. I was actually preparing a 50th anniversary radio show for Gospel Memories in 2013 on Peace Be Still. And a good friend of mine, Reverend Stephanie Minniti, out of New, well, she lives in, I think, East Orange, New Jersey. Her mother, Pearl, was in the choir. And I knew she knew Reverend Lawrence Roberts of the Angelic Choir. And I mentioned to her that I was doing this broadcast. And she said, "Well, hey, would you ever be interested in meeting some of the original angelic choir members, they're right here in Newark and Nutley and so forth. And she said, I should back up, because I'd h had a dream while I was working on the broadcast that I was at the recording. I was like in the dream, I was there at the recording, but I knew that it was going to be a success. And so I told Reverend Minniti about my dream, and she said, "Well, it sounds like you're commissioned to do more than a broadcast on this." She said, "Why don't you consider doing a book?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." She said, "I can introduce you to the angelic choir members." And so I went to Nutley, I met with them, and I realized there was a real story here. And it was interesting because I thought they were going to say, because it was recorded 4 days after the 16th Street bombing in Birmingham. And I thought, well, that moody aspect of this album, I wonder how much of that bled into this recording. And to hear the members saying, no, not really. It was just a fact of our existence. That particular event was terrible and tragic, but it was not what, encouraged us to do this album. That it was like, there's a story here, and it's a story in a story. So that really set me off. It took 8 years, but I got it done.
Wow, congratulations on
Thank
that.
you. Thank you.
So, another one of your books, A City Called Heaven, speak about that.
Oh, sure. That was my first. To be honest, Dr. Franklin, I was working for decades in nonprofit management, and I just felt like there was more to do. It's certainly a noble profession, and there are a great many nonprofits. In fact, I still work with nonprofits today. But I thought, I don't really think I want fundraiser on my tombstone. That's great, but that's not why I'm here. I don't think. So I talked to Tony Heilbut, who wrote The Gospel Sound, and said, I was thinking about doing a book on the Roberta Martin singers. And he said, oh, you're not going to get enough information to do a book on them. Why don't you do it about Chicago gospel? Because there really hadn't been one just on Chicago. So I thought about that, and then Eugene Smith of the Roberta Martin Singers, I had gotten to know through our Gospel Announcers Guild here in Chicago, which I was a member of. And so he said, "Hey, I'll help you." And because I was in the guild, I knew people like Willie James McFadder and Eugene Smith and Doris Sykes, and a lot of the Chicago legends were still alive at that time. And so I started that book. I threw my life savings into it. I knocked my work down to 3 days a week. Luckily, my wife is an entrepreneur and she understood. And so, I just cobbled together whatever I could to write it. It also took 8 years to write, but I just felt that's what I was supposed to do. And I felt the individuals who were, and thank God I did it then, because by the time the book was published in 2015, about a dozen of the people I interviewed had passed away. And I just felt this, I wish I had done it 20 years ago. There would have been more alive, but I knew somehow or another, I was, even when I was writing it, that I was running against time, that every year was going to carry a number away. And I needed to get this book done and their stories captured before they passed on. So yeah, I really felt that was my legacy, I felt.
Well, your legacy is continuing. That's inspiring so many listeners who listen to Gospel Memories. At the beginning, your introduction to the program, it seems like that a tag from NBC. Now, and I'm curious to know. I think it's I find it very catching. But tell me a little bit about the intro to your show.
Yeah, that was just something to give the kind of perk listeners up
Yes,
from
yes.
one show to the next. But then the music, the woman who does my jingle, well, she's now deceased, Mary Wiley. She was a Philadelphia singer with the Velvetettes, Velveteers, and then she went on with I want to say Willa Ward to be a background singer at Cameo Parkway. So. She sang gospel. Willa Ward obviously sang gospel, but they also made money by backing like Chubby Checker and Bobby Rydell, and Dee Dee Sharp and all of these artists on their pop albums. So I got to know Mary Wiley, and she surprised me one time to say, "You know, the Lord told me I need to to take a jingle that I had done years ago for another radio station and turn it into your jingle, and I use it to this day.
Wow. So the common person who may not know the passion that it takes to put together a radio program, talk about your passion and in my view, and don't let me put words in your mouth, that it seems like each program is more exciting than the last. Talk a
Well,
bit
thank you.
about how passion helps to create that particular product that you produce every week.
Thank you, and thank you for that. I appreciate that. I put my show together. I know I go by the idea that preparation is everything, and everything is preparation. So during the week, as I think of songs that might make sense, I put them in the bin ready for Saturday. Obviously, if somebody passes away, we need to, honor them, and so that makes part of it. Sometimes listeners will suggest a topic, or a theme, and I'll go with that. And sometimes it's all just inspiration. I'll think of something and think, that really makes sense. We should play that, or just even rec you know, some a listener might make a request, like with "Peace Be Still" or something else, where they would like to hear it, and I will do it. I will do any request that anyone does. And if I don't have the recording, I'll find somebody who does to play it. But yeah, I really appreciate, I think it has its own sort of rhythm, and I'm responsive to that rhythm, and also make sure that the blend is there so that there are artists that people know and artists that people don't know. I think that's what makes Gospel Memories distinctive from the other traditional, like historical gospel programs, is I recognize that if you play just regional artists, a lot of the listeners will say, I don't know that group, I don't know those songs. And if you play all of the, famous songs, at some point, you're going to just be playing them over and over again. So having a nice balance there, and balance of male, female, quartet, choir, group, soloists, the whole thing, it's to make sure that there's something there that represents gospel.
I think that's a great point that you make about really broadening the scope of the program, because here in California, I'm listening to gospel artists from California, but at the same time, I'm hearing gospel artists from Florida, Mississippi, and so forth. And that mixture really, really helps to create that dynamic variety that your program presents every week. And variety certainly is the spice of life in terms of making sure that each Sunday or whenever listeners out there hear the program, they're not going to hear the same thing. They're going to hear something a bit different, and it's going to be unique and refreshing. So I really like your mix and how you keep the listener kind of guessing in terms of what's going to be coming the next program or during the current program. Talk a bit about that mixing that you started on, but expand a little bit on that.
Yeah, when I first started Gospel Memories, I said, well, I'm only going to play things that are older than 25 years. So that in 2001, that meant like 1970s, right? So, but now 25 years means, really the beginning of the Kirk Franklin era. I'm not quite their contemporary, because I do think listeners don't, even though it is technically 30 some years old, listeners don't consider it old music. But I am getting more into the choirs, the 80s, because I realize a lot of the listeners are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, grew up with Olinda Draper, grew up with obviously James Cleveland, grew up with the mass choirs, the workshop choirs. And so I want to make sure that's part of it, because I hear them talk about it, and I hear that, I don't hear much of it on the radio here in Chicago. So I want to make sure that the mix includes not just 40s and 50s, and even 60s, but 70s and 80s, contemporary mass choirs, groups that aren't being played on the radio anymore for whatever reason. And yet, many people will listen and say, that was what I grew up with. That I remember my choir singing that song. I remember my mother singing that song. It's funny too, Dr. Franklin, I've had instances where someone will contact me and say, I can't believe you played so and so. That my mother was in that group, and it makes me realize that in some respects, what I'm doing on Gospel Memories and what Baylor's doing with the Black Gospel Archives, we're preserving voices for generations that may never hear have heard their grandparents or great grandparents. In a number of instances, there was one instance of a group called the Evening Light Singers out of, I think, North Carolina, and it was a great granddaughter who said, "Would you please send me a copy of one of those records? Because it's the first time I've heard my grandfather, Bishop Passan, ever preach. I never heard his voice. I wasn't old enough. I don't remember." And so to know that these records exist and that some of the descendants can finally hear the real live voices of their ancestors, that's pretty major to me.
I grew up on Sundays hearing my mother play gospel music in particular. She loves Shirley Caesar. I remember the song that brings tears to my eyes now, titled I Remember Mama by Shirley Caesar. And also during the Christmas time or seasonal times, we would hear Mahalia Jackson. I'd like to have you just talk a little bit about with the remaining minutes that we have. Mahalia Jackson.
Oh yeah. Well, it would, a Chicago gospel show that doesn't play Mahalia Jackson probably doesn't deserve to have the title of Chicago gospel show. Mahalia was a force of nature. She was such a character, and it was her persistence that kept, I mean, people look now at Mahalia and think, well, she, world's greatest gospel singer, but the disappointments she had in her life, that her first records didn't sell, and she almost got sick of the recording industry altogether, and luckily move on up a little higher changed her life in that regard. But even so, just to know the physical struggle she had with sarcoidosis and that later out, people who, when you're famous, suddenly they want to be your best friend, and the hangers-on that were around her. And yet, she stayed true to what she did. I used to be of the belief, and somewhat still a little bit now, that her best music came out between 1946 and 19, say, 53. But I do believe that there were other recordings after that, like her "Take My Hand, Precious Lord" from 56, that were just they're just masterpieces. But she was just a natural talent, and she didn't have any training, but she was a voice once in a century.
Absolutely, absolutely. Time has flown. We are right up against our deadline here, but it has been such an inspiration to speak with you, Robert Bob Marovich. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your passion, and your music with all the listeners out there who listen to and enjoy Gospel Memories. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Franklin, and best wishes and blessings on your work as well. You're doing a great ministry. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Take good care.
You too. Thank you.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.